We continue our look at how economic incentives are working here in Michigan. Last week, GM announced plans to expand its Delta Township plant and request a 50% tax break over 12 years from the Lansing City Council. And the new logistics center at GM's Grand River plant that just broke ground comes with a $4 million tax break. Back on Monday, we spoke with Doug Winters, an attorney for Ypsilanti Township, about their cautionary tale of offering incentives to General Motors. The township's experience actually helped tighten Michigan laws that govern economic incentive programs. It turns out that Michigan is one of the nation's leaders in offering incentives to retain companies and attract new ones. At the end of 2012, the New York Times published a database that tracked business incentives awarded by hundreds of municipalities across the country. Besides Texas, no state spends more than Michigan, to the tune of at least $6.6 billion annually. But recent studies have emerged that call into question just how effective these incentive programs are at creating new jobs and attracting economic growth. David Bieri is an assistant professor of urban and regional planning at the University of Michigan. His research has looked at economic incentive programs in the state, and he joins us now. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Michigan spends here at least $6.6 billion annually on economic incentive programs, second in the nation. This is according to the New York Times in 2012. That's a considerable sum of money. Why so much activity here in Michigan?
Yes, it is indeed. It's about 2% of Michigan GDP. And I think, you know, what economists usually want to know is how much bang are we getting for the buck? And so the most difficult thing about assessing the value of tax incentives as an economic development tool is gauging how much impact do they actually have.
But why so much of this activity in Michigan? Does it have something to do with our manufacturing heritage?
It certainly does. It certainly does. I mean, tax incentives in the United States have long been a policy tool directed at manufacturing. And so given Michigan's large manufacturing heritage, it's perhaps in that sense not surprising that Michigan is number two in the nation as far as the deployment of this tool is concerned. But I think as our discussion develops, I would like to make two specific points as to what might be problematic with this way of conducting public policy.
Very good. I'm sure we will get to that. We want to hear what those are. Let me start out by asking a very general question, though, here. Can you comment as to how effective these tax incentive programs are in general? Is that known?
You know, there is the famous saying amongst economists that there are usually three types of economists, those who can count and those who cannot. And so in that sense, in that sense, the answer is that of the two-handed economist. It's the answer that says, well, on the one hand, there is evidence that they do work, but on the other hand, we're not quite sure how well they do work. The general problem with that type of policy effectiveness question is that, unfortunately, we don't live in a world where we can set up, like our colleagues in the natural sciences, an experiment where we have a parallel world that evolves without the incentive. So, you know, assume we live in the current world where we give the incentives and we have a parallel universe where the incentive isn't given. And then after a certain amount of time, we look at the two worlds and see which one has done better. We can't do this. And so despite tremendous advances in modes of scientific inquiry in applied economics, the jury's still out.
Let's go a little bit deeper as to how municipalities and local governments actually incentivize or try to incentivize economic development. One mm-hmm. way is to offer tax incentives through what's called tax increment financing, TIFs. A lot of people have heard of TIFs. And basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, a TIF is a way for a city to earmark local tax revenue for other specific redevelopment projects. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. And in the state of Michigan, there are a broad set of options that municipalities can deploy that would largely fall under this umbrella of tax increment financing, and that can range from anything from neighborhood redevelopment to infrastructure corridor improvements, all the way to brownfield remediation.
How important are TIFs for Michigan cities?
One would assume that they are, judging from the political discourse. Part of what my research has attempted to do is to quantify how heavily municipalities actually do rely on these instruments relative to the amount of property taxes that are being raised. Unfortunately, it turns out that, this is a question that's not necessarily as straightforward to answer as one might have hoped, due to the complexity, the inherent complexity of these instruments.
So you can't point to a number, for example, you can't point to a dollar figure that captures how much municipalities in Michigan raise in TIFs annually. It's just not that.
Yes, I'm afraid so. I can give you a range, what we estimate that this range is, and this range is anywhere between $500 million to about $1.5 billion. Out of roughly, to put this number into perspective, out of roughly $12 billion in property tax revenues raised at the municipal level in the state of Michigan.
Are cities required to report this information to the state?
They are, in principle, required to report this information to the state, but the regulatory compliance with this reporting requirement isn't all that great, as we've discovered over the course of our research.
And why haven't cities been complying with the law? Have you learned anything about that?
Well, I think that, you know, I have a training in the political economy view of the state, and so I think there are certain types of incentives for cities not to report. On the one hand, if they can get away with it at no cost, if the state enforcement mechanism is weak, then you might argue that it's actually rational for them not to report, because reporting bears a cost. You know, in the old days, 20, 30 years ago, when revenue sharing in Michigan was much more active, the state could actually withhold shared revenue that it would not disperse to municipalities unless they would comply with that reporting requirement. Now, arguably 30 years ago, the use of those instruments, of tax increment financing instruments in Michigan, was a lot less active. So this is more of a fairly recent phenomenon.
So you have detected a lack of reporting, and that would suggest that the state is not keeping track of the money that cities set aside for development?
The state is trying to. I think what my research has indicated is it's not for a lack of effort, but I think to some extent the resources are lacking at the state level, and in general the different levels of state and local government have grown to such a complexity that what seems on the surface, using common sense, a fairly straightforward reporting job is in technicality a fairly difficult matter. And so, yes, the answer is, unfortunately, reporting is not as high as it ought to be, surprisingly.
Our guest on Current State is David Bieri, Assistant Professor of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Michigan. David's research has looked into economic incentive programs in Michigan, and we are talking about that. How often does a TIF go wrong? Have you learned anything about that?
Well, I mean, as always, it's, in a sense, as Warren Buffett said, of all sorts of financial instruments, they're not intrinsically weapons of mass financial destruction, but they can be. And so one concern is, of course, that if not deployed appropriately or without the appropriate safeguards, they can wreak havoc. And we do have anecdotal evidence of where these instruments have committed communities In ways that have made their fiscal matters worse rather than better. Remembering that these instruments are, in a sense, an instrument of financial emergency. They arose in the 1950s in California to allow communities to match local redevelopment dollars to federal dollars. And so these instruments were not intended to be used on a day-to-day basis, yet communities, particularly in Michigan, have come to rely on them for local economic development purposes.
To back up just a little bit, to get back to the issue of reporting this money to the state, why should we care that the state cannot keep track or isn't keeping track of the money that cities set aside for development?
Well, I think it goes into this the question that you asked earlier about us, the public, being able to say how effective are the affairs of public intervention. You know, how effective are these public policy initiatives? And so reporting is the most obvious way in which we ensure public accountability at several levels of government. I mean, one of the beauties of living in a democracy is that we have the ability to tax ourselves. But informs us of what it does with the money. And so reporting plays an important part of that public accountability process.
If a TIF goes wrong, though, or if a TIF goes bad, who's on the hook?
As we've painfully learned, that the answer to all of to that question invariably post crisis is the taxpayer. Through one way or different taxpayers or different constituencies will have to bail out these TIFs gone bad.
Like, just to look at the other side of the coin here, do you have any evidence as to how often TIFs accomplish what they set out to accomplish? We're hearing cautionary tales about how often they don't work. What have you learned about how often they do work?
They are definitely a valuable tool in the armory of local government. Let's also not forget that local governments have had fiscally a very tough time over the last 20 years, essentially fighting all sorts of pushbacks on possible tax increases, while demands on local governments have increased. And so TIFs definitely have a role to play. And in a number of instances, when they're with the appropriate safeguards are put in place, can work out well. The worry is if governments exclusively begin to rely on TIFs, for the reasons that I outlined earlier, which is that we currently don't have the regulatory environment in Michigan in place that even allows us to engage in a rational political debate about the pros and cons.
Well, that creates even more pressure on local governments, it would appear. How might local governments better deal with this situation and protect themselves in a situation like this?
I think we're seeing efforts at various levels of local government organization, the Michigan Municipal League, the Downtown Authorities Association. People are getting together. Everybody's realizing that to throw out the baby with the bathwater in you know, the worst possible outcome of a broader discussion about TIF reform or tax increments finance regulation in the state would be to abolish it, to deny municipalities that aspect. And I think the sort of the bottom-up approach where municipalities are beginning to realize that if this instrument is taken away from them and the state has all the statutory rights to do that, then they're at a loss. And so good governance essentially serves the very constituencies who rely on that instrument. And so there is some bottom-up, reform movements. But personally, I think that's not enough. There is there is a stronger top-down imposition from the state that's required to make sure that we have these, say, key performance indicators on the fiscal affairs related to tax increment financing in Michigan.
In discussions like this, you occasionally hear of clawback provisions. What are clawback provisions, and what relevance do they have?
Clawback provisions are relevant. Without being too technical, I think they're a way of ensuring that all constituencies get their fair share of the deal. And I think clawback provisions are relevant as a general category for tax incentives, and they best need to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. I think part of the concern that I have for tax-based incentives at the local level is that they set up, and I don't want to get too much ahead of myself here, but they set up a very asymmetric relationship between the ultimate beneficiary of the provision, and as we've heard on your show, this would be General Motors in the case of a specific locality, versus the locality itself. No, in principle, clawback provisions in any contract are sensible, but what resources does Delta Township in Lansing have, does Ypsilanti have, when it comes to enforcing those clawback provisions vis-a-vis a much more sophisticated corporation such as GM or Chrysler or Ford?
David, any thoughts on why there aren't more efforts on the part of the public to track results and hold companies accountable?
I think because it's an intrinsically complex and fragmented fiscal system that the U.S. has developed over the last 80 years. And where does institutional reform begin? You know, one of the complexities, for instance, for tax incentives arises with the very fact that the incentives that are given to manufacturing firms in Michigan, these are incentives that are state incentives that overlaid with county incentives that are overlaid with municipal incentives. These are not only incentives across different governments, but they're also incentives across different types of instruments. So these are sales tax incentives, property tax abatement incentives, corporate income tax incentives. And to get a unified, simple view on this is intrinsically complex. Maybe I can just...
What should happen next? What do you think should happen next?
I think deal to happen next is for this discussion to be continued in Lansing, and I know of such efforts already in the previous legislative period, and that these efforts go in the direction of more disclosure, which would then allow us to have more accountability and ultimately more transparency on what works in local economic development versus what doesn't. So it doesn't become this opaque, alchemistic tool that some people for political reasons love versus others who hate it, so that we can have a rational debate. And that can only happen through the strong hand in Lansing with the collaboration of communities.
Alchemistic. Very interesting choice of words there. David Bieri is an assistant professor of urban and regional planning at the University of Michigan. David, thank you for joining us.
It was wonderful being on the show. Thank you.